on the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on your radio.
This is ABC Radio with David Astle.
I'd also be quite good at wrestling with my conscience when it comes to Olympic sports. But if you've got a question about dark matter, about physics, about quantum physics, if you've got one of those big existential questions that you've been grappling with, trying to fathom, here's a perfect opportunity because we have got the gifted Dr. Ben McAllister, who's joined us, who's a physicist at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Dark Matter Particle Physics, and also too the ARC Centre of Excellence for Engineered Quantum Systems. And Ben is about to embark upon his fourth big road trip. It's called the National Quantum and Dark Matter Road Trip, taking these big, complex subjects and explaining them lucidly and thrillingly to young minds right across the country and online too. So there's an opportunity for you to tap into this phenomenon. Forget the circus. Let's talk about physics on the road. Ben, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
I have been asking everybody that I've met in the corridors around here at ABC, what is dark matter? I've had numerous attempts. I won't mention names because I don't want to shame people, but someone suggested it's like the fine silt that you see at the bottom of a swimming pool. And for me, dark matter, it's when I'm watching a TV show and I'm imagining the scene that's happening off the screen. I'm imagining things that I'm not seeing in front of me, almost drawing on what the characters are saying in front of me by what might be taking place in another room. In other words, it's the scene I can't see but I imagine must be happening.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy you've got there. It's a great question, what is dark matter? It is actually a question I spend a lot of time thinking about that nobody knows the answer to.
Is there, I mean, if we can just indulge me for a moment in an analogy, is there one that works for you?
Yeah, I like to think of it as it's a thing, as you sort of said, that we can't see. We can't see this stuff, but we can see the things it's interacting with. So, like, we can see it pulling on things in space, but we can't see the thing itself. So it very much is, I like to call it a cosmic ghost. We can sort of weakly, vaguely sense its presence. It's all around us, but we can't, you know, directly see it or touch it or feel it.
Is that the same? I mean, is it by dint of its influence that we infer it exists?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So the way we just the very high level, in case anyone's not familiar with the term, dark matter is really just a very descriptive term that scientists use to describe one of the biggest mysteries in the universe. It is something that is dark, which means you can't see it, and it is something that has matter or it has mass. There's some stuff to it. And yeah, very much we can't see it directly, but we infer its presence by looking out in space at the way things move around. So the way stuff is sort of traveling through space on very large length scales, and we see things being pulled by stuff we can't see. We can see what the scientist-y word would be gravitational influence of stuff where we can't see any stuff. So we infer the presence of extra invisible stuff that provides extra gravity. So lots of different examples of this.
So what are the key clues that imply there is dark matter in prevailing?
Yeah, so the best piece of evidence, or the most common one, is this thing called a galactic rotation curve, which is a really fancy way of saying we measure how fast galaxies spin. So if you've ever seen like a picture of the Milky Way galaxy, which is the name of the galaxy that we live in, where planet Earth is, it's a big spiral of stuff around a very, very dense region in the middle. And if you were to look at a galaxy like the Milky Way with a telescope, and you just looked at a picture, and you looked at all the stuff you could see, you would say, oh, all the stuff I can see, most of it is near the middle of the galaxy, and then it gets wispier and wispier to the outside. And so that means that because most of the stuff you can see is near the middle, you would predict that gravity should be strongest near the middle, because gravity is stronger where there's more mass. Really heavy things attract other things.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
You'd expect gravity to be strong near the middle of the galaxy, which means the stuff near the middle of the galaxy, you would expect it to be orbiting or rotating around really quickly, because there's a lot of gravity to hold it together. Like, think about if you have like a ball on a string and you spin it around. You can only spin it so fast before that string breaks and the ball's going to fly away. There needs to be a force holding it in. So near the center of the galaxy, that force is really strong because there's lots of gravity, so it should spin quickly. And then on the outside, there's less stuff, So we expect gravity to be weaker. So you expect the outer parts of the galaxy to spin more slowly, or they'd be flung off into space.
And the objects to be more sparsely distributed.
They appear to be more sparsely distributed. That's what we can see with the telescope. Mm. And so we would expect them to then orbit slower because gravity is weaker.
That's what we've inferred from what we see.
Well, that's what we expect from what we see. But what we actually measure is that the outer parts of the galaxy spin really, really fast, like way too fast. Like if they were spinning that fast with the amount of stuff that we can see, providing the gravity, the galaxy would be ripped apart.
It's incredible.
So we can't understand how it could spin that quickly without being flung off into space. And so we assume there has to be a bunch of extra stuff that we can't see that provides extra gravity and, like, holds the galaxy together, literally, like, binds the galaxy with extra gravity.
You know what it is? It's this celestial version of slip and slide that we can't see because they're accelerating. It's super quick. It's super slick. It's a force that's – or it's creating this velocity that we can only infer.
You can think of it like cosmic glue. It holds the galaxy together to stop it from being ripped apart by its own rotation.
Love to hear from you if you've got a question. 1300 222 774. As you can already tell, Dr. Ben McAllister is well versed across these complex topics and also has the gift of just clarifying things with the really beautiful examples, great analogies, and very clear steps in the human grasping of the heavens. You can text in too on 0437 774 774. Ben, I'd like you, if you could, to tell me the whole idea of taking this road trip, the big road trip that you're about to embark on from Brisbane all the way through to Broome. I know that you're visiting multiple towns and multiple cities along the way. You've got the challenge of trying to communicate these very complex notions to primary school and high school students, and you're doing a very good job here on a 60-year-old radio host. How do you cope with questions that are almost too difficult for you to explain, that may be beyond the ken of your audience?
You know, I sort of think that you can always explain it given enough time, if you're patient enough. Mm-hmm. And kids are very inquisitive and they're very willing to learn and their brains are sponges. So if they ask a really good question that's really hard to explain, that's a goldmine, because it shows that they're interested and they're locked in, and you can really dig in with them. And if you've got the time, I really do think you can explain anything given enough time.
What's been a question that's really thrilled you? In this is your fourth trip, or in the previous three, what's been a question that's really thrilled?
Yeah, there are so many good ones. The questions from the kids are the best part about it for me. There's really good, like, physics-y questions. Probably the most popular question we get is about aliens. Is there alien life? So when we finish a session and we've dealt with the sort of more, like, subject matter-specific questions about quantum mechanics and dark matter, we kind of say, okay, well, any other questions? Space, the universe, anything at all. And you just get, like, everything, and it's really great. And then, yeah, we also get more esoteric questions. We had this kid last year who just really wanted to know where wind comes from, which is a really out there question. And, like, he was so excited by it. Like, you could see he'd been sitting there sort of quietly through the session, paying attention, but not, you know, very vocal, not asking many questions. And then after a long Q&A session, he just exasperatedly almost is like, I got a question. Where does wind come from?
And did you tell him, like, we Brussels did. Sprouts?
Yeah. Sorry. yes, that's part of it, at least.
Ben, now, for people who'd love to get involved in this, while you may be going from Brisbane to Broome, if you'd like to know more, it's QDM, which is Quantum Dark Matter Road Trip, qdmroadtrip.org. It'll unlock everything that Ben's about to embark upon.
Yeah, that's right. There are events in capital cities around the country, including a couple of events in Melbourne, and there are some online events as well. So even if you're not in one of these regional or rural communities that we're visiting, there's other events that are happening that may very well be near you. So I encourage you to check that out. And it's not all for school kids. It's also for members of the general public, interested adults, anyone really.
So there's a chance for you to hear these online lectures and talks. And also, if you are in Melbourne, there's a couple of trivia pub things coming up at the Clyde Hotel and the Dandenong Hotel. All this is through the qdmroadtrip.org. It'll tell you a lot more about what's going on, particularly if you've got an appetite for physics, quantum physics and dark matter. And there is a link as well to a Victorian story of what's taking place at the bottom of a mine in Stawell. I've mentioned that. Are we any Has that experiment allowed us to understand dark matter any more intricately?
Right. So for those who don't know, yes, we've got this physics laboratory, 1,024 meters underground in Stawell in regional Victoria, which has been built mainly to host this experiment called SABRE, which is a dark matter detector being built by researchers around Australia, the ARC Centre that I work for, the Centre for Dark Matter Particle Physics. It's a collaboration building this thing. That experiment hasn't yet commenced. It's expected to start next year. So it's in the construction phase at the moment. There's some equipment down there taking some of the preliminary data, but the main part of the experiment, yeah, we won't have the hard answers on that for a couple of years.
This is an interesting question, provocative one. Matt in Box Hill. Hi there, David and Matt. Can I ask you this? Well, Ben, sorry. Can I ask you this? Would it be fair to say that dark matter remains a hypothesis?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely fair to say that it's unproven, or we should say unconfirmed. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we have a bunch of different observations that don't quite add up when we look out in space at all kinds of length scales. So I gave the example of galaxies rotating before. We also see other bits of evidence in the large scale structure of the universe. So like very, very big scales. We also see in galaxy clusters. There's all kinds of different pieces of evidence that point to something being missing from our description of the universe. And then there's a few different hypotheses that you can form. By far, the two most popular ones are the existence of dark matter, but there are other ones as well. So some people think that, okay, well, there is no dark matter, and instead, our theory of gravity is just like fundamentally wrong. And that's definitely a hypothesis that you can form, and it's a valid hypothesis, and it's one that people are working on. But for various good reasons, it is not considered by the wider scientific community, the more likely hypothesis. The dark matter hypothesis is kind of favored at the moment. Several reasons for that. First of all, you could say, well, it was only like in the last 10 or so years that we really discovered the last fundamental particle that we know about in what we call like the standard model of particle physics. So it would be awfully pigheaded of us to assume that that's all there is. So
what was that particle called?
The Higgs boson. You may have heard about this.
Of course, with the Hadron Collider.
Yes, that's right. So like we polished off this like model of particle physics, and then like all of a sudden we just go, okay, so that's it. There can't be anything else in the universe. If you ask me, it shouldn't be all that surprising to think that there might be extra things we don't know about. So that's one reason that dark matter is a good hypothesis. Another reason is that the alternate hypothesis that says that like gravity is wrong and that's why we're not seeing things working on like big universal scales, like it's hard. Essentially, it boils down to the fact that despite many, many efforts, nobody has been able to come up with an alternate hypothesis of gravity that works. So if somebody came up with one that described all of the things that we see, people would go, oh, okay, that's probably it. But there is no hypothesis yet. So dark matter is the favored explanation.
I love just how lit you become in explaining this, because I almost sense that I am seeing the child, the teen, the young adult basically pursue the thing that's always puzzled and fascinating. Would that be fair to say, Ben?
You know, partially, yes. I definitely, like, dark matter definitely, like, captures my imagination. Mm. I remember learning about it during undergrad physics and just being like, whoa, how could I work on anything else? It's this gigantic mystery.
It is just so intriguing. Yeah. It's charismatic in its mystery.
Yeah, five times as much of the universe as all the stuff that makes people and planets and stars and black holes, and we don't know what it is. It's passing through us right now. It's all around us. We can't see it or touch it. It's just this enormous mystery. It's
how could you not be fascinated by it?
But interestingly enough, it was actually something like this road trip that got me into studying this. There were scientists from the Square Kilometre Array, which is a giant radio telescope that's being built partially in Western Australia, that came and visited my high school when I was in year 10 and did some after-school programs with us. And yeah, that's definitely part of what pushed me into this career.
And you're paying it forward, as they say.
Trying to.
If you'd love to know more, maybe it's a chance for you to be involved at least online, or possibly in future road trips if you're not in that Brisbane to Broome suite that's taking place very, very shortly. QDM Road Trip, so that's Quantum Dark Matter Road Trip, qdmroadtrip.org. Ben McAllister is my guest, Dr. Ben McAllister, physicist at the ARC Centre of Excellence for Dark Matter Particle Physics, as well as the Engineered Quantum Systems. We've got a question from Charlie. He's in Park Orchards. So just imagine, I'm going to sit in the back of the classroom and see how well you deal with Charlie's question.
All right.
Good luck to you, Ben.
Let's have it.
Charlie, what have you got for us?
So I've got a couple of concepts which I can understand, but I can't reconcile.
Okay.
So speed of light is constant for every observer. Yep.
Sure.
And the Doppler effect is caused by relative movement of bodies through a wave.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So how does redshift work if the speed of light doesn't change for any observer? How can you be moving faster through something that you're measuring at the same velocity?
Yeah, so there's different kinds of redshift that go on, is the short answer. So the thing is, it's because of the fact that the thing is moving and the speed is constant that the apparent wavelength has to change as the thing moves away. That's one aspect of it, and that's the sort of like the thing that you hear with sound when like a car moves past you and you get the compression of the runs. The bigger one that plays a factor in like observations in space, and I must say, by the way, I'm not an astronomer. I'm an experimental particle physicist, but the thing that is the driving factor is the expansion of the universe itself. That actually causes like what they call cosmological redshift. So space itself is expanding and dragging out the distance between the wave fronts in the beam of light,
okay.
And that creates redshift.
Sounded like a pretty capable answer for a very very smart question, Charlie. Are you happy?
Very smart question.
I don't know that it's smart. I'm just a bit slow at
things. No. You are a great ponderer, and that's a very profound question. Thanks so much for sharing that and putting it to Ben.
Jolly good.
Good on you, mate. Thanks a lot. That is a good example of what you do very well. I love that it was that moment as a student. And for you, do you imagine that you're a young man, you're in your early 30s, I'm guessing.
Bang on.
Do you think that dark matter will be a lot more across it by the time that you step down from your position?
Oh, it's such a good question. You really don't know with this kind of discovery science when you're looking at the really fundamental questions, mm-hmm. because we've definitely entered the era with dark matter discovery where, well, I like to say it kind of could be any day, but that also means it could be a day that's very far away. So we've definitely only reached the level of sensitivity with our experiments recently where we really expect to see the dark matter if our model is correct. But the thing is, there are so many models. So like so the dark matter hypothesis at its core is this very simple idea that there is some invisible stuff that has mass that we can't see. There are then like lots and lots of different things you could imagine it is. So lots of different candidates. So lots of different ideas about what the dark matter might be. And any given experiment that you build is probably only sensitive to one or a small number of them. So you can build a very good experiment that is well motivated and well built and very sensitive, and it just turns out that that thing that it's looking for is not the dark matter, and that is not the fault of the experiment. It's just the way the universe is, and we have to do it wrong a lot of times before we do it right. That's how science works. You get stuff wrong, but you do it wrong in a very well documented way so people don't have to be wrong in that exact way again in future, and you get closer to the answer. So we could find it tomorrow if like one of the experiments is looking for the right thing,
picks the right horse.
Yes.
Back to the previous subject.
That's right.
Hence the triumph of the Higgs boson clarification and confirmation.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was like, slightly different kind of kettle of fish there, because that was about like chasing down a very strong lead. So there were like these very, very nice theories of particle physics that were like just missing this little thing that we were pretty sure was there. And we had, you know, some good evidence to suggest that if we built this tool, it was going to show up.
Well, let's hope we make a whole lot more smart wagers too. If you'd love to know more about Dr. Ben McAllister and the road trip that's about to start, there's lots of other people who'll be on that same road trip. I envy the kids who'll be galvanized by the scientists when they visit. It's all happening at QDM Road Trip, but you can be part of the action. Check that same website, qdmroadtrip.org, and you can see there's pop-up chats, there's Q&As, there's a pub and trivia night that's happening in Melbourne too. All that's through the website. Dr. Ben, thanks for coming in. People just said you're so passionate, it's just thrilling to listen to.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you.